One, yeah. Good morning.
Good morning.
Money makes the world go round. Do you agree to that statement? Actually, it's a song in the 60s or 70s. How many of you have heard that song? Not many, but there are different versions of the song. But if you like that statement, I advise you to listen to that song on YouTube. You can hear it on YouTube. Money makes the world go round. There seems to be great news from America. You know why? It's great news for many people. It's also sad news for a minority of people. You know what? Donald Trump is going to be the next president of the United States. Hooray! What do you think? He has won the race. Now he's going to be the next president in 2 months' time. He's going to be president in about 2 months' time. So there's been a lot of analysis, comments on why he succeeded. What do you think is his secret? I've been reading the news commentaries, and they come up with one answer. What do you think is that? What is his secret? Can anyone tell me?
It's good looks.
Good looks. How many of you think it's because of his good looks? But no. From the commentaries that I heard, is because of his economic policies. Of course, he talked a lot about other things as well, but mainly, his economic policies. And briefly, what are they? He's going to increase the tariff of the imported goods from China. You know that? Second thing is, he's going to greatly reduce his support, financial support for NATO. It's going to be disastrous for Ukraine. And thirdly, he wants to deport all the illegal immigrants from America. He wants to chuck them out. What is the implication of all that? Money. In other words, starting from next year, there will be more income for the people, for the common people in particular, for the blue collars. And that is great news. That's why, according to the commentators, he won the election. It's all about money. So if you were a candidate for presidency, that's the vital issue, the main issue that you need to talk about. Economics, because it means money. If you say, talk about family values, ethics, morals, pretty soon you'll be out of the race. Nobody wants to hear you. So money is the great factor here. It's true for all countries. They always talk about economics during their speech. Inauguration speech in particular. Isn't that true? Except for maybe communist countries. As a matter of fact, if you look at the political policies, it's economics. Capitalism talks about money. If you are strong and hardworking, you earn more money. What about communism? It's also about money. Equal wealth, at least theoretically, equal wealth for everyone. What about socialism? It's all about money. It's in between socialism, is about communism and capitalism. It takes the middle ground. That's where we are here. This is a socialist country. But in any case, you can see it's all about money. Money talks. Money makes the world go round. How do I make this thing work? It's not moving. Yeah, sorry. There's a Chinese expression, when translated, it says, nobody hates the smell of money. Have you heard of that expression before?
Yeah.
Nobody hates it. Everybody likes it. Even though your $10 bill or your $100 bill drops into the toilet bowl or into the mud, the mire, etc., you still pick it up. You don't mind the smell. It smells awful, but you don't mind. You still want to use it. And during Chinese New Year, you often heard this expression, Gong Hi Fa Choi. That means I wish you prosperity. What is prosperity? Money. It's all about money. Money, money. Money talks. Money is everywhere in our lives. But then, let us be realistic. Money can do a lot of things. We must agree to that. Let us be practical. Let us be down to earth. With money, you can buy a great mansion with four bedrooms, queen-size beds, a large library study, etc., etc. You can buy a mansion. With money, you can buy a lot of books, certificates, diplomas, money. If you study arts in the university, it often happens in countries, in Western countries, you can hire people to do your paperwork for you, to write your thesis. Right? You can get a lot of things. You can buy a grandfather clock with money. I once went to a friend's place when I first came to this country. Well, he has lots and lots of clocks all over the house. I said, wow, wow, a lot of grandfather clocks. So with money, you can buy clocks. With money, you can have first-class health policies. Do you have a health policy? Yeah? It's good news. That means you can enter the first-class top hospitals. You get excellent care for that. So with money, you can do all those things. It's not working. With money also, you can have lots and lots of what? Friends. Is that true? The richer you get, the more friends you have. Do you find that to be true? If you are as poor as a church mouse like me, you're not going to have many friends. You get friends because people, you know what? They can get a lot of, Chinese we say, jacksos, a lot of benefits from you. Yeah. So it says in Proverbs, the poor is disliked even by his neighbor, but the rich has many friends. How true is that? So, do you have many friends? It is a measuring rod for all of you. So, what does this tell us? Money can buy lots and lots of things. Is that right? Yes, that's true. I don't need to explain that. I just gave you a few examples. It can buy you what? A mansion, a house. But what? It can also get you can anyone read it out for me? I can't see that clearly. Yeah, a queen-size bed where you can sleep comfortably. A good grandfather clock, a good nice rest, yeah? It can get you books, certificates, diplomas, if you have money. It can get you what? High positions, yeah? If you have the right connections, the right, you have the money, you can buy these things. Right? You can get what? My eyes are failing me. Yeah. Yeah. What's that again? Is that? Health insurance, yes, health insurance. You can get what? Also, lots of friends. You can buy friends, in a sense, you can. And you can buy sex. Though not recommendable, surely not. But what? You can buy a mansion, but can you buy a home? No, you cannot. But a home requires what? Requires commitment. It's a place where you get warmth, comfort, support, etc. You can get a good-sized, queen-sized bed or king-sized bed, but does it guarantee you a good, nice rest? It doesn't. A good, nice rest depends on other many factors, your state of mind, your health, etc. A good grandfather clock. You can buy a grandfather clock, but can you buy time? No way. You need to plan. You need to schedule your time. It needs a lot of planning. A clock will not solve your problems. You can buy books. You can buy diplomas, certificates. But you cannot buy wisdom. What is wisdom? Wisdom is acquired. You get it from experience. You get it from your many failures. Then you get wiser and wiser. That's how you get wisdom. You cannot use money to buy it. And again, you cannot buy high positions. Respect, honor, and accountability, etc., needs to be earned. It's not purchasable. It's not for sale. And then health insurance, does it solve your problem when you are sick? Yes, it's good to have a good health policy, but it doesn't necessarily help to solve your health problems. You still need to have the right diet, regular exercise, if you want to stay healthy and strong. Isn't that true? That's true. What about friends? You need to have genuine friends. Genuine friends need to be cultivated. They don't come naturally. It takes years, sometimes years, to build up trust, to build up a genuine trust, fellowship, commitment to one another. Then you can have real friends. Yes, you can buy sex. Not recommended. Sex is a dangerous thing. It's like wildfire. It needs to be under control. But you cannot buy love. Love needs to be cultivated. It needs a lot of commitment. So you can see all the things on my left-hand side, and there are many more. These are things which are basically good, but they do not solve your problems. They may be purchasable, but they are not just good enough for us. Things on the right are good things for all of us, but they are not purchasable. They need to be cultivated. They need commitment, you see? So I want you to do a little exercise. I want you to do an exercise. I've given out some tips. There's a formula in your bulletin. You can look at your bulletin. You read the passage. The chairperson has read the passage for us. I want to work out there's A and B and C. Can I give you just 1 minute to work out what is A, what is B, and what is C? Can you work that out? 1 minute of your time. It's all in the passage, embedded in the passage. This formula summarizes the whole passage. So I want you to work on it individually. Ding dong, your time is up. This is the formula. Have you got it? How many of you have got it? Godliness plus contentment is equal to great gain. How many of you have got it? Yeah. That's the formula. It's a summary, actually, of the whole passage. If you understand this, you have got the gist of the whole passage. Of the whole message. So, another thing I want you to work on, you can work it out with your neighbor. And again, I can only give you 1 or 2 minutes. And then, that is the concept of godliness. What is godliness? Can you discuss with your neighbor? What does it mean to you? What are the implications of godliness? This term turns up in Timothy, as well in the book of James. And there are many passages about godliness. So what is godliness? Can you work it out? You can discuss with your neighbor. Yeah, we often hear this term, godliness, to be like God, but what does that mean? Can you give me a simple statement? Your time is up again. There can be many definitions of godliness. My best definition is this. It's not working. Placing God first. In other words, God has the priority in your lives. So what does that mean, God having the priorities in your life? I can give you a number. There are many, many examples. For example, making God your top priority implies a lot of things. For instance, giving up a high paid job that requires you to work on Sundays. A sister in another church once told me, I actually asked her, "Oh, I haven't seen you a long, long time. You haven't come to church for many months." She said, "Yes, because I can earn more if I work on Sundays." It's 1.5 times the ordinary salary. That means if I earn $20 an hour, if I work on Sunday, it becomes $30. $20 becomes $30. That's a 50% more income. So that is placing God first. Which is more important, earning more money or going to church to worship God? That's one example. You place God first, you prefer not to work on Sunday, even though it's higher pay. You still come to church. giving up a highly paid job because you want to worship God. You're placing God as a top priority. Giving one-tenth of what you earn to God. Do you do that? And more on that later. And the next thing I want to talk about, I'm a bit reluctant, but I still need to say it. Be in time to worship God rather than having an extra half hour sleep. Is that true? You see, some of you may say, oh, I work so hard. I have to work overtime, even on Saturdays. I just need more sleep. But is your sleep so very important? Can you reschedule your work in order that you come to church on time to worship God? I think that's very important. Placing God first. God has the priority. Yeah. Spending time with God. How much time do you spend with God every day? Reading His Word, praying on your knees, either it be in the morning or at night. How much time do you spend with God? Or do you prefer to watch TV rather than praying, worshiping God, reading His Word, and pray? What about helping the poor? One day someone might turn up, knock on your door, and said, Mr. Wong, I'm sorry to say that, but I've been recently fired from my work. I don't have any work. And coming weeks, it'll be very hard on our family. Can you give me a loan of, say, $100 so that I can pass through this time of difficulty? Crisis. Oh, never mind. Go home, I'll pray for you. Are you being Christian? Is that what the Bible says? The Bible says we should help one another. We should even pray for our enemies. So you say, you praise God first. God tells you to sakataboa, to help those in need. So there can be many, many other examples, but basically is this. Godliness is placing God first. God has our priority. Contentment. How do you understand contentment? You're satisfied with what you have, what you got. That's contentment. You are happy with God's provision. Are you happy with God's provision? You know, the passage we have just read, for we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing, with these, we should be contented. Are you contented with your life? That is contentment. I know you have you heard about this? I think you have all heard about Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great, he conquered most of the world, whole of Europe, Africa, and almost China and India. But then at the age of 33, he had this incurable disease. And he said to his followers, "When I have three wishes, I'll just mention one here. When I'm gone, prepare a coffin for me. And at the top of the coffin, on the two sides, make two holes. So that when I'm gone, I can put out my two hands." Two hands. What is the implication of this? That means I came to this world with nothing. And here I am going to leave this world empty-handed. That's Alexander the Great for you. We take nothing out. So we need to be satisfied with what we have. That is contentment. you are satisfied with God's provision. I quite like this saying. This saying is from a well-respected, honored pastor. He's no longer here, but he said this a long time ago, and it's deep, deep in my heart and mind. He says, God is gracious. God is gracious. I have what I needed, and what I don't have, I don't need. Can you understand what he's talking about? God has given me all my needs. What I have is what I need. What I don't have is what I don't need. I hope this is going to be your prayer. It's a wonderful prayer. That means he's got complete satisfaction, contentment. What I need is what I want. What is this talking about? I'm quite happy to drive a car, a very ordinary car, a Toyota, a Honda, whatever. I don't need to drive a Rolls Royce or a Bentley or Alfa Romeo, those expensive cars. I don't need that. I don't need a very high paid job. Ordinary job will do for me because I can go to church, I can go to fellowship. I'm quite happy with that. When I go on a holiday, I don't need to live in a 5-star hotel or a 6-star hotel. Three stars is good enough for me. So I'm quite happy with what I have, what God has provided for me. Is it the same with you? What I don't have is what I don't need, which is true. Yeah. So I hope this can become your prayer. Can I ask you to say that? I have what I need. What I don't have, I don't need. Yeah, it's a good prayer. I hope it becomes your prayer as well. You'll be contented what God has given to me. You see, the human problem is, what is the human problem? Our wants are higher than our needs. We want things we don't need. But here, it's saying, this pastor is saying the opposite. Let our needs be our wants be equal. I hope you know what I'm talking about. Our needs and our wants are equal. Then you'll be contented. So you can see the order. First, you need to be godly, and then you need to be contented. Contented with what God has given you. And that's great gain, according to the passage. So what is the great gain? What do you think is the great gain? Again, I need you to think for half a minute. What is the great gain? What's so great about that? I think one of the greatest gain is what? Peace of mind. You have inner peace in your heart. And that is very important. Because you are at peace with God, number one. You are also at peace with yourself. That is also very important. Thirdly, you're at peace with other people. The three levels of peace that are very important in a Christian's life. Do you agree? Yeah. So you have inner peace. When you have this inner peace, there's another great gain. What do you think that is? You are about to have daily bread. That is another gain. Daily bread in our lives. That means God will constantly give you your needs, not your wants, because our wants are insatiable. We always want more. But God will give you just the right amount of things that you need, not what you want. So let our needs and our wants be equal. And that's very important. It comes with a warning as well. What is the warning? It's the love of money. Here I need to mention money itself. Money is a good commodity. It's excellent. Imagine the time. Do you know the history of money? Before the time money was invented, people had to trade with material things. Like one cow is equal to 10 sheep. One sheep is equal to 10 chicken. 10 chicken is equal to one sack of rice. It's got very complicated before money was invented. So money is basically, intrinsically, good for all of us. Without money, it's difficult to do business, to do transactions. Is that correct? Yeah. So, but the love of money is bad. It will drag you. It's like a whirlpool. It drags you down and down. Gambling is a good example. I'll just quote one example. When people gamble, I know some people, they go to the casino, they lose a lot of money. What happens? They lose some money. They always want to win back the money that they have lost. You see, even when you win in the casino, for instance, you still want to win more and more. You see, our wants are insatiable. You always want more. You're not never satisfied with what you have. I want to briefly mention two Chinese characters. The first is the word tam. You don't have to remember this word. It means greed. This is our basic problem. Our basic desire, greed, to have more. Greed leads to poverty. And here greed leads to poverty. If we look at the two characters, you don't have to know the two characters. They're very similar. Can you see the strokes? Only the top part is a little different. Greed. They're like suckers. It's mentioned in the Proverbs. Greed is like the slug sucking your blood. In this case, sucking your money. And eventually you become poor. I actually have a friend who is now in America. He mentioned to me, he used to be very rich. He came from a very rich family. His father had a lot of factories in Macau. You know, in Macau, there are a lot of casinos. The last time we went to Macau, there were 35 casinos in a very small place. That's how Macau earned its money, from the proceeds of gambling. Well, my friend, who is now in America, he told me, he has a lot of factories in Macau because somehow he got addicted to gambling. After, I can't remember how many years, he lost everything. Yeah, I've been reminded of the time, so I need to go on quickly. So, the important thing is, who is in control? Are you in control of your money, or is the money controlling you? I very briefly want to mention three things. Are you controlled by money? And incidentally, are you controlled by power or authority? Or are you controlled by sex in your life? Now, basically, all these three things are good. I will not explain in detail because of the time. So basically, these good things. But if they are not under your control, and instead they control you, then you're in big problem. You're in great trouble. So it's important to know who is in control. You need to control your money, If you are a person in authority, you need to control your authority. Yeah. And sex as well. And here is a warning. You must guard against all covetousness. Yeah. Because our wants are often bigger than our needs. That's important. Second thing is, we all know this scripture, and that your treasure is where your heart is. If someone gains the whole world and loses his trust in God, and is in big problems. For where your treasure is, there will be your heart as well. Let us remember that. Let us place our trust and our hope and our faith in God. So there are two more things that I mentioned that I'll finish off. This is about offering. We had offering just now, and is a very important aspect of our lives. We need to give cheerfully, according to this passage, cheerfully as a cheerful giver. Are you a cheerful giver? There are three kinds of givers. I think you heard that last year. Simon Cheung told us about offering. The first one is the tipper. What is tipper? You feel embarrassed when the offering bag is passed through. You just put in a few coins. You treat God like a waiter, a waitress in a restaurant. You give him some tips. There's a tipper. The second kind is you do it out of duty, or is it transactional. God, you bless me, then I give you back what I have for you, one-tenth. The third kind is the cheerful giver. You give from your heart because you love God. So as a summary, there are three things I want to mention. God should be our priority in all things. That's important. Love of money is the root of all evil. Money itself is good. It's intrinsically good. We need it. But beware of the love of money. It's going to destroy us. It's bad for human relationship, etc. And remember, godliness and contentment is equal to great gain. You all understand that. I hope you can remember that. The very, very last thing I want to mention is a prayer that I like very much. And that is, remove far from me falsehood and lying. Give me neither poverty or riches. Feed me with the food that is needful for me, lest I be full and deny and say, who is the Lord, lest I shall be poor and steal. I think this is good. We don't want to be rich. Not that richness is a sin. It's not. There are a lot of rich people in the Bible. But for ordinary people like us, we need to be contented of what we have, not what we want. Yeah, at least we'll sin against God. So may God bless you. Yeah.